Okay, welcome back to our Daf a Week Shir. So we are up to Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. And Mark, I'm just going to mute you. Or if you don't mind muting yourself. Yeah, so we are up to Tes Zayin Amud Aleph and the very top. And so we've been speaking a little bit about the whole story of the Arba Shenichnasu LaPardes, the four great rabbis who went into Pardes, who had this sort of a metaphysical experience. And we said that each of them had a different response to it. We know that one of them went crazy, one of them died, and one of them went off the derech. And then there's Rabbi Akiva, who was Nichnas L'Shalom V'Yotzei L'Shalom. He went in peace, and he left in peace. And so the Gemara left off last time about what made Rabbi Akiva so special, that he was able to leave in peace. And basically we say that Rabbi Akiva was blessed with a certain greatness to him, that Hashem said, don't even think about harming my great Akiva. And we now continue trying to understand what Rabbi Akiva was doing that was able to separate his mind from, or rather enhance his mind when he went into this party, so that he wouldn't end up becoming a kofar, or that he wouldn't end up dying, or anything like that. So says the Gemara again, top of Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, the very first line, my darash. So what exactly, which pasuk was Rabbi Akiva darshaning? What pasuk was he expounding that he knew that he would essentially be able to avoid looking towards anything that seemed to be like the Shekhinah or the area of the Shekhinah, and then he would not have to worry about potentially either going off the derech or seeing something bad that he shouldn't be seeing or misinterpreting something? What was he darshaning that helped him avoid looking in that direction? So there's several different opinions over here. Amar Rabba Bar Barachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabba Bar Barachana said the name Rabbi Yochanan. The Asa Mirevavos Kodesh. So we have a pasuk in Sefer Devarim that it says, and Hashem approached, that Hashem like came towards with some of the holy myriads and the myriads of angels. So basically, from this pasuk, Rabbi Akiva said, Osu Barivava Shalo, that Hashem, his Shekhinah, is represented by some sort of an os, some sort of a symbol in his myriad, which basically we are to understand means that when Hashem is, when he is surrounded by all these malachim, there is a little area that looks a little bit different, and that's the area of Hashem. So Rabbi Akiva knew that anything that looked a little bit off or different, that he didn't look in that direction. That's essentially a very basic interpretation of what we just read. Rabbi Abahu Amar, and Rabbi Abahu says, no, Dagul Mirvava, the Pasuk, and Shira Shirim says Dagul Mirvava, which the full pasuk in English is my beloved is white yet like dirty, preeminent above a myriad. That's Dagul Mirvava, like preeminent above a myriad. Dugma hu baravava shalo, which means that he, meaning Hashem's Shekhinah, is represented by a dugma, by like a certain likeness in his myriad. Meaning Hashem's presence stands out different than everything else. Reish Lakish Amar, Reish Lakish says Hashem Tzavakos Shemo, that Hashem the Master of Legions is his name. Adon hu batzava shalo, that he is a lord, he is a master in his legion. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Akiva had a different source to learn this from, that the pasuk says, Lo baruach Hashem, Hashem isn't in the wind. This was all a conversation with Eliyahu. So Eliyahu was told that Hashem is not in the wind. Va'achar haruach ra'ash, after the wind came an earthquake, Lo va'ra'ash Hashem, and Hashem is not in the earthquake. Va'achar ha'ra'ash ish, and after the earthquake came a fire. Lo ba'ish Hashem, Hashem is not in the fire. Va'achar ha'ish kol d'mama daka, and after the fire came a small, thin sound. V'hinei Hashem over, and that was showing that Hashem was passing by. Essentially, all these psukim point to the same idea, and that is that if you want to understand when you go into this pardes where Hashem is, where His presence is, all you have to do is look for something that does not seem to belong in that arena of things, and that will essentially be proof that Hashem's presence is there. And so when Rabbi Akiva learned this from any of these psukim, again, it's a machlokas, which pasuk he learned it from, wherever he learned it from, he therefore knew when he got into pardes, avoids looking at certain things, and that will save him altogether. And that's what he did, and that's how he was saved. Okay, now the Gemara is going to want to darshan, or the Gemara is going to go through a brisa that the will deal extensively with some of the topics that we've been speaking about thus now. In particular, it's going to relate to the topic of the Acharei HaPargu, that we know that Acher, he heard, like behind the curtain, that that everyone is allowed to return except for Acher, and this evidently was the catalyst for him going off the Derech. So this Braisa makes mention to that as well. Let's see what the Braisa has to say. Tana Rabban, the Rabbi Sa'ar and the Braisa. Shisha Dvarim Nemru Bashedim. There are six things that were said about Shedim, about demons. That Shlosha Kamalachi Asharis, that they have three characteristics that are like the Malachi Asharis, that are like the angels. Ushlosha Kibnei Adam, and there are three things regarding demons that are like people. Shlosha Kamalachi Asharis, so the three things that demons have that are like angels. Yeshlahem Kenafayim Kamalachi Asharis. So first of all, demons have wings just like the angels. V'tasen mi sofa ulam be'ad sofo Kamalachi Asharis. And demons can fly from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth, just like these Malachi Asharis. Essentially, the Mefarshim explain that it means that angels can inhabit any part of the world, so too demons and angels, humans cannot inhabit any part of the world. They can only inhabit parts that are habitable. Angels can inhabit any part of the world, and so too demons can also inhabit any part of the world. And then v'yodin masha asidlios k'malachi asharis, and demons also know what is going to be in the future. They can tell the future just like the ministering angels, just like the angels can tell what's happening in the future. Now says the Gemara, what? Demons? They're psychics. They know what's going to happen in the future. Yodin sakadetach. Could anyone even think for a second that when we say that they know what's going to happen, that they know the future by themselves? The person has to realize that even the Malachi Asharis don't know the future. So how could a demon really know the future? Ella, no. Shomen me'achorei apargud k'malachi asharis. No. How do the Malachi Asharis? How do the angels know what's going to happen? The angels can hear what's going on behind this Paragud, behind this partition that evidently, I guess, goes to a deeper part of like the heavens. And so they hear what's happening behind there. Both the angels hear what's happening behind there, and the demons hear what's happening behind there. And evidently, there are announcements made of things that are going to take place on Earth. So not even things that are going to happen long-term, but short-term, there are things that that are going to happen. So they don't know the future, what's going to happen in 30 years. They know, what's going to happen in the next couple of days, whatever it is. Both demons and the angels know these things. Then the Braisa goes further. Ushlosha kibnei Adam. And there are three things the demons have that are like humans. What are they? Ochlin v'shosin kibnei Adam. They eat and drink like humans. Parin v'ravin kibnei Adam. Unbelievable. So demons, they have an ability to be fruitful and multiply, just like humans do. Umesim kibnei Adam. And demons also die like humans. So amazing. They have some very human characteristics that you would not necessarily expect for a more mystical type of being. Okay, now the Braisa says, Shisha Devarim Nemru B'Bnei Adam. There are six things that were said about people. Shlosha K'malachi Asharis, Shlosha K'Behima. Three of these things make humans like the angels, and three of these things make humans like animals. Shlosha K'malachi Asharis, what are the three things that make us like angels? Yesh Lahem Das K'malachi Asharis. So first of all, we have like a Das, we have an understanding of the world, of things in general, like the angels do. U'mahalchin B'Koma Zukufa K'malachi Asharis, and we have the ability to walk standing up straight, like these ministering angels. Umesaprim b'lashon hakodesh k'malachi asharis. And so too, human beings have the ability to speak Hebrew just like the angels. Interesting, the Gemara in several places notes that angels don't speak any other language, so it's a little unclear what it means that we speak Hebrew like them. Doesn't mean that just that we have the capacity to speak Hebrew, because not everyone speaks only Hebrew, not everyone even speaks Hebrew at all. So seemingly it means that we have the capacity to be able to do this, and then this is the only language that the angels speak, so that's another way that we're similar to them. Okay, then Shlosha Kibahima, there are three things that make humans like animals. Ochlin Veshosin Kibahima, that we eat and drink just like animals. Uparin Veravin Kibahima, and we multiply just like animals. Umotsian ri'i kibahima, and humans have they go to the bathroom just like an animal would. And these are our three comparisons to animals, and it's interesting to note that two of these things are exactly how the demons were compared to humans, so it's worthwhile to wrap your head around that. I'm not sure what the implication of that is, but it's worthwhile to be aware of. Okay, with that, we then go to the next part of the Mishnah, where we said, Kol ha-mestakel bi-arba'a dvarim, that anyone who looks into the following four things, rasoi lo shelo ba la'olam, it would have been better for him never to have come to this world. And we said, what are the things? So we said, what's above, what's below, what's before, and what's after. And we explained that there are different possible ways to interpret this. One possible way to interpret it, of what's before and what's after, means those things that came before the creation of the world, and those things that are going to come after the creation of the world. I believe that Rashi actually explained on a spot that all these things refer to looking at the world, or like the heavens itself, and looking beyond that, like look what's above, what's below, what's to the right, what's to the left, or to the east or to the west. But for now, let's assume that before and after means like before the creation of the world and after the creation of the world. So says the Gemara, after meaning I think after the end of the world. Okay, so Bishlam Mala 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 Mata Mala Mala Achor L'Chaye. So says the Gemara, I understand why it's not really an appropriate thing to go look into what's above and what's below and what's after. That makes a lot of sense, right? So to look into things that we are not aware of yet, or that never have not happened yet, or are hidden from our eyes. So okay, to not look into them makes logical sense. Ela lefanim, but to not look what was before. Why is this considered something that is so off limits? Mad hava hava, whatever happened. Just look at the history books. It's not like such a big deal to look at what took place. So Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, Damrei Tervayo. No, so the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar both explained. Mashal amalach basa v'dam she'amar la'avadav. It's like a king says to his, it's like a human king who says to his servants, Benuli Paltirin Gedolin Al Hashpa. He says, you see that big trash pile over there? Build me a beautiful castle. Build me a beautiful palace on top of that garbage dump over there. Halchu Uvanulo. They go and they build it for him. Ein Ritzono Shel Melech Lahaskir Shem Ashpa. And so after the beautiful castle, after the beautiful palace is built, the king doesn't like to talk about this garbage dump anymore. He says, you know, just talk about the palace, don't talk about the garbage dump. Because, in other words, the mashal essentially is that it would be embarrassing to talk about what came before this beautiful, majestic castle. Now, clearly, what came before the world is not, God forbid, disgusting, because it was all part of Hashem's, because Hashem created everything from nothing, so there was actually nothing. But nonetheless, the point is that it's just not like a covetic thing to do, to go look at the very beginning, or to look before the creation. And so therefore, just like, and we can understand it on our level, that it's not appropriate by understanding this mashal, that just like over here it's not a nice thing to do, it wouldn't be covetic to look at the trash heap of the king, so too, even though there is no trash heap, it's still not appropriate to look before the creation of the world. Okay, then the Gemara said further, the Mishnah said further, Kol shelo chas al kavod kono, anyone who doesn't is not careful to honor to honor Hashem, rasoi lo shelo bala olam, it would have been better for this person never to have come into this world. Maihi, so what kind of person is this that we're talking about that seems to not honor Hashem properly? So Rabbi Abba says, Zeham stakel bakeshes. This is someone who looks at a rainbow. You ever see someone like staring at a rainbow? I remember once, I don't want to say where, I was in a certain place where davening was about to start. Not in Merrick, so don't worry. But somewhere that I once was, the davening was about to start, and one person came in and said, there's this beautiful rainbow outside. Everyone come take a look. Everyone left davening to take a look at the rainbow. So you can rest assured that that's probably not an appropriate thing to do. But everyone was going, so I went too. But it was really bad peer pressure. But yeah, you can rest assured that's probably not the appropriate thing to do. So one person who doesn't give proper kavod to Hashem is someone who looks at a rainbow. And we'll see why in a second. Rav Yosef Amar, and Rav Yosef says, Zeha Ober Avera Baseser. Someone who commits an Avera in in private, in secret, that's someone who doesn't have proper kavod for Hashem. Says the Gemara, Mistakel Bakesha, someone who looks at a rainbow, is going against the honor of Hashem. Dichsev, as it says, Kimarei HaKeshes Asher Yehyeh Be'anan B'yom HaGeshem, that like the appearance of a rainbow that would be in a cloud on a rainy day, Kein Marei HaNoga Saviv, so was the appearance of the brilliance all around, Huk Marei D'mus K'vod Hashem, that was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Hashem. In other words, what the Pasuk is basically saying is that looking at a rainbow is tantamount to looking at the Shechina. No one would ever have the chutzpah to look at the Shechina directly to break Tavali at that kavod. But if a rainbow was like, if looking at a rainbow was like looking at the Shechina, therefore we should never look at a rainbow, because that too would be an infringement on the kavod of Hashem. Then says the Gemara, Rav Yosef Amar. Rav Yosef says, Zeha over Avera Baseser. Right. This. So we said that's someone who commits an avera in private. That's someone who is violating the kavod of Hashem. Rabbi Yitzchak, and this opinion of Rabbi Yosef seems to go according to Rabbi Yitzchak. The Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, that Rabbi Yitzchak says, "Kol over avera baseser kilu dochik raglei shchina." He says, "Whoever does an avera in private, it's as if he pushes away the feet of the divine presence." Shne Amar, the pasuk says, "Ko Amar Hashem Hashemayim kisei haaretz hadom raglei." Pasuk we've quoted before that Hashem says, "The heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool." So a person who's doing an avera in private is doing so because he thinks that Hashem isn't here. So essentially, he's pushing away the feet of Hashem. He says the feet of Hashem on the footstool of earth are no longer there. So this is someone who's not giving proper kavod to Hashem, because he's essentially saying that I don't think he's really here. Okay, so Vayter. So Amy, so says the Gemara. Okay, good. So you explained the two ways that we are violating the kavod of Hashem are, again, someone who looks at a rainbow, and we gave a proof for that based on the pasuk, and we said someone who doesn't have avera in private, because you're basically saying, I don't think Hashem is really here. But says the Gemara, Eini, let's take a step back for a second. Is this really true, that it's really that bad to sin in private? Meaning the implication is that what's worse, sinning privately or sinning publicly? Well, if you're saying sinning privately is so bad, then sinning publicly seemingly is a little bit better than that. That's how the Gemara's thought process is going to go. So, Eni, is it really so that it's better to sin in private than it is to... Sorry, that it's worse to sin in private? Is it really so that it's worse to sin in private than it is to sin in public, meaning that you would think it's better to sin in private so that no one sees you, so you're not going to desecrate Megichel Hashem that way? But I'm a Rabbi Ilah Hazakin, and Rabbi Ilah Hazakin says, Im roe adam sheyitzro misgaber alav, if you see a person that his yitzer hara is like overwhelming him, yelich lamakom she'in makirino, so he should go somewhere where no one knows who he is, v'yilbash shchorin v'yisatev shchorin, he should dress himself all of in black, v'yaseh mashalibu chavetz, and he should do whatever his heart wants. But meaning he should violate whatever sins he wants to, specifically in a place where he can be anonymous. But he shouldn't be machal Hashem Shemayim. Meaning better to do something in private. Again, this is probably maybe public, but private that no one knows who you are and that no one's really going to notice it. So here, clearly, the statement of Rabbi Yilah Hazakin is that it's better to do an avera in private than it is to do an avera in public, which seems to be the opposite of what we just said, that it's a really major infringement of Hashem to do an avera in private. Says the Gemara, no, lo kasha. Rabbi Yilah Hazakin, he's not really arguing with Rabbi Yosef's opinion. Rather, what's going on over here? Ha dematzi Kayef Lili Yitzrei. This, when Rabbi Yosef says that it's really bad to sin in private, this is basically saying that the reason why this private sin is worse than a public sin is because this is a situation where a person has the ability to push away his yitzer hara, but basically says, no, I'm gonna follow my yitzer hara. So in other words, if you have the ability to push away a sin, and then you basically say, I'm not going to push it away, but I don't want to do it in public, because that would be really bad. I don't want my friends to see me. I'll do it in private. So that's really, really bad. Because you could have pushed it away, but you didn't. And it's essentially, and you're doing it in private because you don't want anyone else out there to see, because basically you're saying, Hashem, no one is here to watch me, so it's okay to do it in private. But hadalomatzi kayef liyitzrei, but the ruling of Rabbi Yilah Hazakin which basically says that it's worse to do an Avera in public. So this is talking about when he's not able to push away his Yetzirah. Like, he literally can't stop himself. He must have the cheeseburger. If you really, really must have that cheeseburger and you keep fighting the Yetzirah and you really can't overcome him, okay, then you go do it in private. But if you really could push it away and you're sort of, you know, willing to just give in, you know, a little bit too soon. So in that situation, then it's better to, it's worse to do it in private because you're basically not acknowledging Hashem's presence there at all. But again, if you are not able to overcome it, then you just have to do it, then better to do it in private. It's a little bit of an odd thing to say because at the end of the day, if you are succumbing to the Yitzhara, you would assume that that probably means that you don't have the ability to overcome it. So it's hard to really pinpoint what the case is over here. Let's be talking about someone who, and I guess it can make sense if you think a little, you know, a little bit more intensely about it, but you're talking about someone who, if he really pushed himself, he probably could overcome the Yitzhara, but like, sometimes you do things you shouldn't be doing, and so this person probably didn't push enough, and that's probably what it means, someone who is able to subdue the Yitzhara, but doesn't actually subdue the Yitzhara. Okay, so with that, let's keep moving. So now, says the Gemara, another statement about the rainbows. Darash Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Nachmani miturgamani d'Reish Lakish. So Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Nachmani, the translator of Reish Lakish, he darshan as follows: Kol amestaka b'shlosha devarim einav kehos. That whoever looks at the following three things, that his eyes are going to become like dimmed, and that a person won't be able to see properly if he looks at these things. Bakeshes uvanasi uvakohanim. Looking at a rainbow, looking at a prince, and looking at Kohanim. So each of these things has some sort of a connection to the Shechina of Hashem, and so if you look at them, your vision will be impinged. So Bakesha, so one shouldn't be looking at a rainbow. The Pasuk says, Kemarei HaKesha Sasher Yehiyeh Be'anan B'yom HaGeshem, the Pasuk that we quoted above, like the appearance of a rainbow that would be in a cloud on a rainy day, Hu Marei Demos Kavod Hashem, that was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Hashem. So fine, so you don't look at a rainbow. But Nasi, one shouldn't look at a prince. The Pasuk says, V'nasata Mehudcha Alav, that it says you should place some of your hod, like your majesty, upon him. Upon this, the context of this pasuk is specifically saying you should place some of your like majesty on Yehoshua, and the pasuk says that they're going to listen to Yehoshua, and so the understanding is that Yehoshua is going to get some of this extra added honor over here, and when he gets some of this extra added honor, that he'll be considered like he's on a loftier level, and so one should make sure, therefore, not to look at him. Then hamistakel b'kohanim, and then regarding someone who looks at kohanim, that this can be endangering to their eyes, right? This is clearly connected to that we don't look at the kohanim when they duchen. So says the Gemara, bizman shebeis hamikdash kayam. This is specifically saying you shouldn't be looking at kohanim when the beis hamikdash was standing. Shehayu omdin al duchanim, and the kohanim were on their special platform, right? That's what a duchen is, like a platform. So they were standing on their platform and blessing the Jewish people, mevarchen es Yisrael b'shem hamforash, and they were blessing the Jewish people with the very special name of Hashem that is not pronounced nowadays. It was only pronounced back in the days of the Beis Hamikdash. So, in these different circumstances, Hashem's presence is sort of resting upon the hands of the Kohanim, and therefore it's better not. Therefore, you should not be looking at them. So, anyways, these three things: looking at Yehoshua, or rather, looking at any sort of a prince, looking at a rainbow, and looking at Kohanim, are all things that will make you go blind. Essentially, then the Gemara says further. Another statement of Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Nachmani. So Darash Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Nachmani miturgamani d'Reish Lakish. The Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Nachmani, the miturgaman, the translator of Reish Lakish, says he darshened. My dichtiv. What does it mean when the pasuk says al ta'aminu b'reya al tivduchu b'aluf? That the pasuk, I believe in Micha, says that don't trust a friend and don't rely on like an official, and the pasuk concludes in English: guard the doorways of your mouth from the one who lives in your bosom. So it says the Gemara, im yomar lecha. So what does this pasuk mean? Im yomar lecha yitzer hara. If the yitzer hara says to you, chatov hakadosh baruch hu muchel, that it's okay, do your averos and Hashem's going to forgive you. Al tamin, don't trust him. Ve'ein rea ela yitzer hara, and this word rea, it refers to the yitzer hara. Shenamar, how do you know this? Because the pasuk says ki yitzer lev ha'adam ra, that for the inclination of man's heart is evil, is ra from his youth. Ve'ein, and so that's how you know that when we say raya, that means the Yitzhara, because the inclination in our heart is referred to as ra, is referred to as evil from youth. Ve'ein aluf ela kadosh baruch hu, and the word aluf refers to Hashem. Shenamar, because the pasuk says aluf ne'urai ata, that you, like you Hashem, are the master, you're the aluf of my youth. Shema tomar mi me'id bi, maybe you'll ask, who will testify against me, right? If I do commit an aveira in the privacy of my own house, so who's gonna testify against me? Abnei beso, the stones of a person's house, the kuros beso shel adam, and the beams of a person's house, he me'idin bo, these are gonna testify against me. How do you know this? Shenamar, the pasuk says ki even mikir tezak v'chafis me'itzi ya'anena, that for a stone will cry out from the wall, and a chip from the beams will testify to it. So essentially, what the Gemara is basically saying over here is don't fall victim to your Yitzhara, and if you do, then your house is going to testify against you to heaven that you sinned. And then the Gemara says, "For the Rechachama, or the Chachama say, what are you talking about? Nishmaso shel adam iida. It's not the person's house that ever testifies against him. It's the person's soul that testifies against him. Shenemar, that the pasuk says, misho cheves chekecha shmar pischei picha. It's that the end of the pasuk that we just quoted above from Micha says, guard the doorways of your mouth from the one who lives in your bosom. Izohi davar shel cheves becheko shel adam. What is something that lies in a person's like chest in their bosom? Have a omer zona shama. This has to be in a shama. So Rabbi Zrika, my Rabbi Zrika says, Shnei Malachi Asharis Hamalavin also, that the two angels who are escorting a person on Friday night, we know that we say Shalom Aleichem, we're specifically talking to these angels that are escorting us from Shul. So these angels that escort a person from Shul, Hein Me'idin Bo, no, they're the ones who give testimony about a person. Shana Amar, as the pasuk says, Ki Malachav Yitzaveh Lach Shmarcha B'chol Derechecha, for he will charge his angels concerning you to observe you in all of your ways. V'yeshem, and there are those who say, Evarav Shal Adam Me'idin Bo, that the limits of a person testify against him. Shana Amar, the pasuk says, V'atem that you are my witnesses, the word of Hashem, and I am God. So up until here, we've basically seen tons of Agadata since we've been at the Mishnah until now, and the Gemara is now going to shift to speak a little bit less about these esoteric topics, but the last several dapim that we've learned have been a very fascinating delving into this world of Agada in a way that we don't always find in the Gemara, and so it's worthwhile to continue to understand as best we can. But anyways, for now we'll stop right here. God willing, next time we'll continue with the Mishnah, and I wish you a beautiful night.